I wouldn't say we fell in love right away. I think we were, as they call it in the biz, trauma bonding.
And then after 8 years of being insufferably sober, I started drinking again.
Addicts tend to be rather sensitive people.
Aren't you Marc Maron? I'm like, yeah. And she goes, what happened to you?
Well, hey there. Welcome to Light Hustler, a podcast about sharing our dark to find our light. Today, it's one of those episodes from my storytelling show, and I'm releasing a bunch of these, and they're really, really funny and good and meaningful, and if you don't want to miss any, because maybe you have, and maybe you're full of regret, and regret is not a feeling I want you to have, just hit subscribe. You never have to worry about missing one. Isn't that cool? So today's episode is, he was a newbie to my storytelling show. He will be back. As you will be able to hear, he is very funny. And that's it. I'm just so grateful to you for listening. Did I say my name's Anna David and I host this and I write books and you can find out my hub now is lighthustler.com. But yeah, keep listening to this podcast. Go subscribe and you will never, ever, ever have to miss us. Now, put your hands together figuratively. Maybe you want to clap, I don't know, but for comedian Ken Garr.
I'm really excited to bring up your next comedian. I've seen him perform a few times. He's a graduate of Second City, who's performed at the Laugh Factory, MGM Grand, and the Hollywood Improv. And he's been on Hulu, Playboy, and Funny or Die. His comedy album, So I'm Sitting in Jail, is now available on the Dash Radio app. Please, everyone, give a warm welcome to Ken Garr. Yeah.
One more time for Jessica, everybody. Keeping on for Jessica. My name is Ken Garr. Not yet. And I have broken every bone in my body. True story. I have osteogenesis imperfecta. It is brittle bones, made popular by the movie Unbreakable by Samuel L. Jackson. That's the dark part. Everything else is funny after this. 35 bones, arms, legs, jaws, everything. Broke it all. So what happened is when you're a kid in the 80s and you have anything wrong with you, they don't let you stay in regular school. They put you in a handicap school. And I'm like, I'm totally fine. They're like, nope, here's your helmet. Go over there. So I go to the Jane Neal School for the Handicapped in Chicago, Illinois, right? I'm in there for first grade, and I walk in, and they've got a sign-up for the Special Olympics. So I signed up. Now, in the Special Olympics, it's not like the regular Olympics. They have a lot of the similar sports, but they also have, like, all these different sports. I signed up for the beanbag tournament. I didn't even know it was a thing. I've never played beanbags in my life. Turns out, prodigy. I'm like one of the best beanbag players in the world. Blew through the qualifying rounds, make it to the actual Special Olympics, 1988, Soldier Field, Chicago, Illinois. Got super cocky, right? I had done so well in the fucking qualifying rounds. I was just like, I looked at my dad. I go, bet the house because we're bringing home the gold. Which leads me to believe that there's somebody taking bets in the Special Olympics, and ironically, he's called a handicapper. All right, let's... So I've got a very important part of the story is that I have these braces on my legs, okay? I had fractured my legs so often that the bone plates, the growth plates were affected, and they had to put in those Forrest Gump leg braces. I had to wear those for 3 years so that my legs would straighten out and they would grow regularly. So in the beginning of the Special Olympics, they have a parade, and I'm like Forrest Gumping around the track, and I'm waving to my parents. Now, the great thing about the Special Olympics, and I mean this, is that for the first time in your life, you feel like a normal person, right? Like you're surrounded by these people that have these extreme situations going on in their lives, whether physically or mentally, but we're all normal. We're just a bunch of athletes hanging out. I'm just happen to be one of the best beanbag players in the world, right? So we have a little parade where Forrest coming around the track, but I got like super cocky, like way too cocky, and I underestimated my competition. Here's why. Neither one of my competitors had use of their arms. One guy had no arms, and the other kid had the flipper thing going on. I look at my dad, I'm like, double the bet. We're definitely bringing home the gold. At this point, liberal West Hollywood, I feel you getting nervous. I can feel it. It's tense. I'd just like to take a moment to remind you that I'm in the fucking Special Olympics. I'm not observing the Special Olympics. I'm in them. Wearing Forrest Gump leg braces. Special Olympics starts, right? And what I fail to realize, and what you guys probably understand, is that what God takes away in one area of your life, he gives you tenfold in another. So the guy with no arms kicks off his shoes and socks, picks up the beanbag with his big toe, he flips it 20 feet in the air, and it went right in the fucking hole. I go, holy shit, what just happened? All right? Now it's a cumulative scoring. The guy scores like 26 points in a row. Like, that's a good score, okay? It's time for the flipper kid, right? I'll find a better name eventually. I'm sorry. Flipper kid goes, right? He doesn't use his feet. Want to know why? Because homeboy's got a built-in catapult system in his wrist. Okay? Lays the beanbag on the catapult. Bop, bop. Flips it. 20 feet in the air, right in the hole. Scores 31 points. I look over at my dad, right? He's got his arms crossed like he's the sensei from the Cobra Kai dojo. Check it out on YouTube, by the way. Great show. Because apparently he bet the house. I get nervous, all right? I pick up my first beanbag. My hand is sweating. It gets caught in my Forrest Gump leg brace. It rips open. There are beans flying everywhere. Long story short, I won a bronze medal in the Special Olympics in 1988. It's a true story. Now, here's the point of the story, kids, right? Number one, don't underestimate kids with special needs. Because there's no one more motivated in this whole world than someone who's been told 10,000 times that they can't do something. And the second point of the story is this, is if one day you find yourself standing on the bronze medal podium at the Special Olympics and you're cast in the shadow of a gold medal winner who is currently eating the beans out of the beanbag. Become a stand-up comedian. Because no one's going to believe this shit. I broke my elbow off. In 1991, came off completely. I got beat up by two kids. I'm from the south side of Chicago, rough and tough, right? Mouthed off to the wrong kids. They threw me on the ground, broke my elbow off. It went up here somewhere, and they brought it down. And I had to go to the hospital, get it reattached with, you know, whatever. And that's when I discovered morphine. And I was just like, fucking pretty awesome stuff. They give you a pump. And they're like, what? Here's a pump, and you can pump it anytime you feel sad. I was like, how's every 14 seconds sound? How does that work for you? So I'm hitting this thing like it's goddamn Jeopardy, and I'm a champion. No one tells you when you're 13 years old and doing morphine that after 2 days of morphine that you'll get to meet Jesus. They don't tell you that shit. Met him. Nice guy. Good guy. Hallucinations start. I leave the hospital. I'm like having like fucking, you know, I'm feeling it. I don't like it. It scared me enough, thank God, to never do drugs in high school or college. Right? I never did. That's how much it scared me because I knew at that early age that I had an addictive mind. Right? I'm not going to go just smoke a little weed and have a good time. I'm going to like fucking do this thing. Right? I also started drinking about 13 years old. My brother's an alcoholic and he handed me my first beer and I took a drink and I'm just like, oh, fucking everything feels great immediately. We'll do this for the next 19 years. Let's do that. So I started drinking at about 13 and finally about 20 months ago, I got clean and sober. I quit drinking, right? I did it kicking and screaming. I did not want it. I mean it from the bottom of my heart. I tricked myself into sobriety, right? I originally quit drinking, and I told myself this because I wanted to lose weight. Turns out my beer gut, just a gut, right? Just a regular gut. Just eating shitty all the time. Didn't lose a single pound. I quit drinking for a variety of reasons. Number one, and I'm an addict, right? Number two, I got tired of being the creepy guy at the club. All right? There's one creepy guy at the club. That was me for like 15 years. Because here's what would happen. The more I drank, the more time slowed down for me. I would see a cute girl at the bar and just check her out real quick. In my mind, it was real quick. In reality, 47 minutes. Just staring at her. had a full conversation with her in my head. Oh, this is going to go great. You do six shots of Jaeger because you get a courage to talk. And I walk up, I'm like, yada, bada, bada. She's like, have you been in the Special Olympics? I have. I'm a bronze medal winner. Couldn't talk to girls, man, right? I discovered that my brain works differently than most people, right? I didn't know it, right? First of all, I'm from the south side of Chicago, and drinking is like the pastime here. So I came out to Los Angeles 5 years ago. I'm like, how come you guys aren't getting fucked up on a Tuesday morning? I'm like, it's kind of the best thing ever. What are you doing? So I quit drinking, and I realized very quickly that my brain works differently. Like, right, I have one sip of alcohol, and my brain goes, spring break, and I get kicked out of a Chili's and my pants off. Like, that's what happens. It's awkward, man. I'm not a cool guy to drink with. No one's ever called me after a night of drinking and was like, Ken, you were amazing last night. Oh, my God. First of all, you crushed it with the ladies. Second of all, your views on 16th century Western European expansionism was spot on. That's not the phone call I got. The phone call I got was, hey, man, what time did you stop crying and did you ever get your keys out of the river? Like, oh, shit. Oh, my God. They're in the river? Sober shaming is a thing. It's real, especially amongst men. I was at a bar a couple of weeks ago for my friend's birthday party. Guy offered me a beer. I'm like, oh, man, I don't drink anymore. He's like, pussy. I was like, really? I was like, I'm a grown man. He goes, I don't trust any man that doesn't drink. I'm like, we're not in a foxhole in Germany in 1942. You know what I'm saying? Like, we just met. I was mad. I was angry, right? Because that's what happens when you sober up. All that shit comes up. I didn't know what to do. I'm like, yeah, like when you quit drinking and sober up, you become like a clitoris after sex. You're like, just give me a minute, babe. Just give me a minute. All right? Just get back off, all right? I'm feeling this right now. You feel all of it, right? I wanted to fight this guy. Problem was, he was 6'4", 250 pounds. Like, God damn it. I had to use my brain, which sucks. I was hell-bent on getting back at this guy. I was hell-bent. It was going to happen, right? Now, this guy, 6'4", 250 pounds, linebacker, gorgeous, blue eyes, blonde hair, perfect teeth. Everything was perfect about this guy. Never had a bad day in his life. But one of the things that I noticed, his girlfriend was like a 6 at best. That's important for the story. And I just sat there, right? Because when you're sober, you just have patience, right? And just bide your time. I bought him shots. I'm like, yeah, fucking drink some more, bro. Yeah. This guy gets blackout drunk, right? Blackout drunk. The music's pumping. Pow, 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 pow. And I'm going to make my move, all right? So I walk up to him, and I give him the bro hug, and I whisper very quietly in his ear, I thought she'd be prettier, and then I ran out of the bar. Right? He didn't hear me, but his subconscious did. I inceptioned that motherfucker. I took an idea and I buried it 3 levels deep in his head. And he woke up the next day and he looked at his girlfriend. He's like, something feels different. Now he's 2 months sober. Because I know a little something about the fragile male ego, all right? I'm not standing here because I have plenty of validation and unconditional love in my life. I'm standing here because I want to listen to your recorded laughter later on, jerk off, and go to bed. You guys have been nice. My name's Ken Garr. Thanks so much.